This is 89.1 WEMU. It is your community NPR station. I'm David Fair, and I'd like to welcome you to this week's edition of Creative Impact. And this week we have a literary focus, and I couldn't be more excited. WEMU's Creative Impact content partner is the Arts Alliance. Deb Pollack is its president and CEO and serves as my co-host for Creative Impact. And it's good to be with you again, Deb.
Absolutely. And I'm, too, also very excited. When our guest was 15, he sent out his first short story for publication. And then over the next 8 years, he collected more than 160 rejections.
Sounds like my story.
Well, thanks goodness he didn't give up, because he's since published more than 90 books and has won a ridiculous number of writing awards and received a few national book nominations. He does this all from his Washtenaw County home that he shares with his wife, business partner, and author in her own right, Deborah Morgan. So let's welcome one of my favorite authors, Lauren Estelman.
Welcome to Creative Impact, Lauren. It's great to have you with us.
Well, thank you, David. Thank you, Deb. I'm just delighted to be here.
Now, Lauren, you were born and raised in the community. You are an Eastern Michigan University graduate, and among the genres you have chosen to cover through your illustrious career is crime and mysteries and westerns. I understand why you were between those rejection notices Deb mentioned and your first novel. You were a reporter for the Dexter Leader covering the police beat. Did that stimulate your interest in the crime and mystery novels?
Yes, to some degree. I spent a lot of time, and I worked for some other weekly papers, and I spent a short time with the old Ypsilanti Press on police beat as well. Did a lot of ride-alongs, and I got along great with those guys. The neat thing is not to have an adversarial relationship with the police. Often they'll be working on a story, and they'll ask you to sit on something which usually isn't very important. And I would do that, and after a while, they began to realize that they could trust me. And they started opening up to me with stories that they would never tell to the public as a rule, knowing that it was just between us. So now I'm getting a chance to use some of those stories with, of course, the names change in a lot of my writing.
So you also do a fair amount of historic-based novels, and I'm reading The Confessions of Al Capone right now and loving it.
Thank you.
And you've got a new release, The Eagle and the Viper, about the times of Napoleon in 1800. You've got to be quite a detective yourself.
I do. When you say that I chose these genres, the genres actually chose me. I've always been fascinated with history, and this particular story that became The Eagle and the Viper is an idea I've had since college. I've had this idea for 50 years.
Wow.
And I've been interested in Napoleon since junior high. But about 50 years ago or so, I found out about this attempt to kill Napoleon when he was first consul of the Republic of France, which was kind of like a president. And the royalists who wanted to restore the Bourbon monarchy to the throne attempted to murder him. They set an enormous bomb off on a busy Paris street, killed hundreds of people, dozens of people actually, and destroyed the street, and completely missed their target, Napoleon. And I've been always wanted to have something to do with this story, because it's always fascinating me. But when I actually sat down to write it many years ago, at the end of 100 pages, it actually come to the end of the conspiracy, and I thought, how am I going to fill out the rest of the book? So I set it aside for a long time, and it was later on that I got the idea of if there were, and this is true, if there were 30 attempts to kill Napoleon during his reign, why couldn't there be 31? And that's when I came up with the idea of a lone assassin who goes by the codename the Viper, and that's where the story took off from there.
I am fascinated, Lauren, by process. Obviously, this was an idea you'd been ruminating on for quite some time. And as Deb mentioned, you're quite prolific, over 90 books that you've written in a relatively short period of time. So what is your process from going from idea to sitting down and writing and then getting it out?
Well, often with an idea, there are two ways that you use ideas. Either something comes to you right away, and you get so excited, you sit down and you start writing. Or you get an idea and you just kind of poke it aside for the time being, either because you know it's not gestated yet or you need to work on some other things. And often it's kind of like you throw it in a dusty drawer, and I'll mingle among people, and I'll get into conversations with people at cocktail parties or in the barber shop or whatever. And little by little, I'll pick up little pieces of information which I don't know I'm ever going to use. I'm just interested in it at the time, and I kind of toss that in the drawer, and after a while, it all kind of breeds and multiplies, and before long, suddenly it comes forth as a full-fledged idea, and then there's just no stopping me.
Creative Impact continues on 89.1 WEMU with Deb Pollack, my Creative Impact co-host, and we're talking with Lauren Esselman, local esteemed and prolific novelist, and we're discussing his work.
So, Lauren, your bibliography includes a number of series, Amos Walker being one of them, and he's the protagonist in more than two dozen books. Ian Rankin is another of my favorite detective writers, and he once tried to wrap up his Rebus series after 17 books and just couldn't. Is there always another Amos Walker story in your queue, or do you ever tire of the same character?
Well, that's one of the nice things about the kind of things that I write, is that... And there are times, you know, when I tire of a certain character, then it's time to do something else. But one of the nice things about swinging back and forth between contemporary crime fiction and historical writing, like a historical Western, is I can go from one to the other when I get tired of writing about today's world and having to worry about clues and suspects and timetables. I can go back, say, to the Old West or back to Napoleonic France, and deal with an entirely different set of situations. It's a different pace. I like to call it literary crop rotation, as when a farmer lets a field lie fallow for a season while he works another field, and that way that field begins to grow back its nutrients, and when you're ready to plant again, it's ready to go. And then by the time I've done that and I finish, say, a historical Western, I'm ready to do another Amos Walker, so he's never
let
me down.
In the reviews of your work, people take note of the fact that you tend to write some hard-boiled characters, but do so with beautiful presented prose. And I'm just wondering, do you seek out or intentionally try and find these passages that resonate or find a turn of phrase that is going to make all of us go back and look at it and highlight it so that we can return to it?
That's kind of the goal from time to time. I know that I actually set out to do that, but some of these turns of phrase and metaphors and similes, some will come to me right away, and those are the ones I don't trust because I'm not sure whether I might have heard them someplace else, so I have to research that to make sure it's all mine. And some of the others, I kind of stare at the ceiling until my forehead bleeds, as someone once said, and then I come up with something. And when I go back and read them later on, I can't tell difference between what I had to go out with a club to find and what came to me naturally. But every once in a while, something really does excite me when I've written it, and I realize this is the quote that all the reviewers are going to jump on. I remember once one of the Amos Walkers, this came out of nowhere, he went to Windsor and he said, "Windsor is just Detroit after the maid's been in." And as soon as that happened, I said, "That's the one," and it showed up in almost every review.
Well, I find myself reading them aloud to my husband, Russ, frequently. So what's the hook? Why do you think people like to read crime and detective novels?
Yeah, I've thought about that a lot. And I think part of it is the fact that we're a very mobile society, even, and we will be again after we get through this current crisis. But when you're a moving target, you tend to be more of a target than when you stay at home. So at this point, I think if I were to address a room full of people and ask for a show of hands of anybody who's been a victim of some kind of crime, most of those hands would go up. So we're all potential victims. And you read about crimes in the newspapers or see them on TV or they happen to you, and often you don't see how it came out. Most of those crimes are solved, but it doesn't always get reported. And I think we tend to be drawn toward a kind of literature that promises us that the crimes will be solved and the perpetrators will be brought to justice. And I think there's a certain bit of comfort in that.
Again, returning to the sheer volume of work that you have put forth, it kind of reminds me of the earlier career of Stephen King, where he was putting out a couple of books a year, and he put Bangor, Maine on the map. And through some of your series, you have, in a way, put Detroit on the map in a different way for people to look at and perceive. Was that important to you?
Yeah, it was. You know, people often on early on would ask me, you know, why Detroit? And I said, well, I don't live near San Francisco. I'm a country boy at heart. Everything has always come filtered through Detroit to me, through news, through the culture. And so I know Detroit quite well. I learned a great deal more about it when I began writing the Amos Walker series. But in the beginning, people would say, even the local people would say, nobody is going to be interested in Detroit. And I say, well, let's just see what happens. And now, recent years, I've had more and more publishers ask me, when are you going to do something else about Detroit? So I don't know if I put it on the map. I think Elmore Leonard, who was a good friend, sure. Dutch Leonard, had a great deal to do with that, and some other people as well. It was just a matter of timing. Someone once said, when it's steam engine time, someone will invent a steam engine. So everything came together at the right time. And I always find something new to write about Detroit. It just keeps changing. It keeps evolving, and there's always something fresh.
Well, we will wait with bated breath for the next one.
Well,
and
thank you.
We
and
can obviously
glad.
Talk to you for hours, but thank you so much for taking time today. Radio simply doesn't allow for that kind of lengthy conversation.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that very much.
That is Lauren Esselman, local award-winning author of close to 90 books. His latest, The Eagle and the Viper, is out now. You can find more information at his website, which is laurenesselman.com, and we'll have more information on our website to link you directly there. Deb Pollock will be back again with another show next week.
Absolutely, with yet another great creative Washtenaw guest.
Deb Pollock is president and CEO of the Arts Alliance and our partner in Creative Impact. I'm David Fair, and this is your community NPR station, 89.1 WEMU-FM and WEMU HD1 Ypsilanti.